Welcome to the Grace-Based Family Podcast.
We're your hosts,
Karis Murray
and Michelle Brook. This is a podcast where we look at the power of grace in the everyday lives of families.
We're excited for you to listen in on the conversation.
Hi, Karis. How are you?
Hey, Michelle. Doing great.
Good. I'm excited for today's topic because it's something that I feel like I'm always talking to my kids about. We're going to talk about overparenting your children.
Okay.
Specifically, raising your kids towards independence. So I kind of wanted to start us off with a study. There's two studies that are out there, one from UCLA and one from University of Texas, that show a correlation that overparenting correlates with an increase in mental health problems with our kids, specifically anxiety and depression. This research was done by psychologist Dr. Madeline Levine, and she shares that her research on this kind of solidifies that three ways that we may overparent are these. Number one.
These are kind of like, for the purpose of our discussion today, can we kind of understand these as, this is what we mean when we say overparenting.
Yeah. Why
does that matter?
Why does it matter? Why are we talking about this? You know, is it an issue? So three ways we might overparent. First, when we do for our kids what they can already do for themselves, tying their shoes when they're old enough, you know, little things like that. Mm-hmm. Second, when we do for our kids what they can almost do for ourselves. And third, when our parenting behavior is motivated by our own ego.
Okay.
So these are ways that we possibly overparent.
Okay.
And studies show that it may even correlate with a higher increased risk of mental health issues.
Yeah,
so it's just something to talk about and consider in your own parenting style.
Right. And correlation isn't causation, you know, and they were really careful in all this research to point that out. I think lay people often hear these numbers and we go, oh, overparenting causes mental, you know, causes depression, well, they don't know that, right? This is a correlation. And so it's good to keep that in mind. But I do think, when you take this research and then you look at it just from a, you know, just sort of a common sense perspective, you go, okay, if there's a correlation, why could that be?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think when you really break it down, you start to see, oh, yeah, I can see why a parent doing things for their kid that they can do for themselves, or doing something they can almost do for themselves, or parenting from a place of ego, it really, it kind of handcuffs our kids and handicaps them for all the learning opportunities, the growth, the resilience that they can learn otherwise. And without that confidence, so much of the challenges that maybe they would be bolstered against in life that they face down the road, that is just part of life. It's inevitable. But if you don't have confidence, and if you've not learned resilience, and if you don't feel a sense of autonomy and independence, like, oh, I can figure out, I can do hard things.
Right.
I don't know how to do it, but I can figure it out because I've figured all this other stuff out.
It can lead to anxiety.
To me, I go, that's a setup for being consciously anxious. And then for feeling bad about yourself and your abilities, that's a setup for depression, you know? So to me, yes, the studies are so important and seeing the correlations, but then you back out of that and you go, well, yeah, kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Would you say most people overparent or underparent?
Well, I mean, for me to answer that question, I'm coming from a perspective of being an educator in parenting. And the encounters that I have with parents are when I'm teaching a seminar or speaking somewhere on parenting, or people are, you know, they come to us and they're looking for resources through our ministry. So I think it's that has filtered out. The underparents.
For sure.
The people who are prone to underparent by default, they're not going to parenting conferences. They're not going seeking out resources. And so it's a skewed view of it, but recognizing that, I see overparenting way more just in the work that we do here. And then I think just in my own life and my friends and my kids' friends' parents and other parents at school, I feel like I see the overparenting a lot more. Mm-hmm. And that may come from the fact that we're sort of in an upper middle class area of the city and that tends to be the people who are at that school, and that there may be some correlation there between affluence and overparenting.
Sure.
Because without the affluence, you can't overparent. Right. You're working three jobs.
Right.
Right.
Yep. You're not around to be stressed about, you know, getting your kid to school looking perfect and all their parent portal websites.
Right. So what do you think you see?
I would say probably overparenting just because of the, you know, industry that we're in and the circle that we run in. I would say my parents probably underparented me in a lot of ways and that it encouraged independence. So I probably underparent in the area of school. Don't judge,
is that underparenting or is that just parenting?
Well, maybe it is. Yeah. To me, it feels normal. I'm not intentionally trying to do it, but I'll have other parents say, oh, don't you love that the kindergartners are working on the time, like learning time? I'm like, oh, they are? I had no idea that my kid was learning how to tell time. I mean, that sounds really dumb, but
doesn't sound weird to me because that's how I have been, at least on the academic front. It's kind of like, if there's problems,
I said, if there is a problem, please let me know. But they've gotten great grades and they're little. So I feel like I'm always
broke. Don't fix it.
Yes. I still have one that's not really in school yet. So that could be, you know, a different story. But for now,
yours are younger than mine, too, you know. But
I'm not super concerned about grades at this age, but I didn't even know a parent portal existed. I'm just like, well, I guess if there's some sort of failing or some behavioral issue, let me know, you know?
Right.
So, but in other areas, I think life lessons, I overparent, like to the point of my kids are like, Mom, right? Like,
oh, because you talk to them about the life lessons a lot.
Everything is like, well, and because you don't put your shoes by the door, you're not going to have self-discipline. If you don't have self-discipline, you won't finish school. Then you'll end up in a bridge, like under a bridge and
living
homeless.
In a van by the river.
Yeah, it's just, it's too much of that sometimes. So I'm probably a good balance.
Yeah, where they're like, Mom, I just forgot to put my shoes.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's going to be
fine. It's not the end of the world, but to me, sometimes everything is. So yeah, I think if we're just raising kids and that's the only end that we have in mind.
Yeah, getting through today.
We're going to have a tendency to overparent. But when you think like, okay, our task is to raise adults. When I picture my boys walking onto a college campus, are they prepared? Mm-hmm. That changes how I parent now.
Yeah.
It changes it drastically.
Well, and I'm at that phase with one of my daughters and the other one's right behind him. And so even when you take that into account in your parenting early on, you still kind of hit panic mode at some point. And you're like, did I teach him everything they need to know? You know, like I'm in this phase right now with mine where I was like, we're going to learn how to cook 8 recipes this summer. And I want to make sure you know how to get into your banking app. And like all you do think like, you're not really thinking about that when they're 3. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're not even thinking about it when they're 15. And there's a lot of stuff where it's like, it's not so much that you are consciously doing it either. Right. So it does take intentionality. Right. And then that perspective, which is what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. If you're going at parenting with a perspective of, I just have to survive today.
Yeah.
Right? And not, I'm raising future adults.
Yeah.
And what that's going to, you know.
Coming from a good place.
Right.
Anyone who is overparenting or doing all the things from their kids, it's out of love, right? Mm-hmm. It's not because they're being selfish or they don't care about their kids. It's done with the best intentions. But sometimes when your kids are overly reliant on you to do all the things for them, not only can they become resentful, but they're not self-reliant. Like,
well, there's that old saying, the path to hell is paved with good intentions, right? Exactly. What that means is we can do a whole lot of harm with good intentions. Right. And so ultimately, intentions matter, but we also have to think about outcomes mm-hmm. and what's actually occurring mm-hmm. and then change and amend what we're doing yeah. if the outcomes aren't good. Mm-hmm. And I want to give a little caveat here, because anytime I think we are talking about raising future adults, I think the Holy Spirit just comes in and, mm-hmm. you know, bites me in the ear to remind me that a lot of the parents listening to us are raising kids with special needs of some kind.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
That run the spectrum. And so some of our kids may not, what their adulthood looks like mm-hmm. is very different. Mm-hmm. Right? And so the book that we're referencing is talking about primarily neurotypical kids.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. kids who are, you know, do not have disabilities mm-hmm. and challenges that really change the landscape of what their adulthood means.
Right.
Okay. So if you're hearing us talk about that, no, this is on our heart. And I mean, special needs parents within that community, there's a lot of conversation about overparenting.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because it's really easy to, it's like, you know, you have a kid with so many needs. It's really, really easy to get so, you know, hold everything so tightly in your hands. You're so worried to make a mistake, yeah. for harm to come to your child, yeah. that overparenting looks a totally different way yeah. in that context. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem too.
Right. No, but I'm really glad you mentioned that, because we are just talking about kind of mainstream, run-of-the-mill
mainstream-ish. I mean, I have one that is not neurotypical, but right. her particular challenges are not going to prevent her from living an independent adult life.
Exactly.
But I have totally different, I do approach parenting her differently mm-hmm. than my other one, mm-hmm. because I have one that is hitting milestones as you would expect.
Right.
And then I have one who's hitting milestones, but hitting them at a delayed rate.
Yeah.
And so I do have to think about that
yeah.
On her trajectory.
Right.
To make sure that we're resourcing her properly.
Yeah.
And not beating her up or beating us up when she's right. not hitting those milestones on time, because we can look back and say, look, she eventually hits the milestones. Mm-hmm. It takes her a little longer mm-hmm. and that's okay.
Right. And so her graph's going to look a little bit yeah. different, and you're going to be working on different things with her.
She's not ready to move out at 18 and have her own apartment.
Right.
You know, but at 20, yeah. You know, so. Yeah.
But you might yeah. be working with her on, let's make sure you can do the laundry really well. And, you right. know, maybe you're just hitting those milestones at a different, like you said, different pace. So
different
don't
pace, yeah.
hear us saying everybody needs to fit into this, you know,
right.
one path in this one
yeah.
hole.
But
here,
within
so.
All of our stories, I think, you know, we're really not talking to the underparenting crowd right here, because
right.
they're not listening to our podcast anyway.
True. Very
you know,
true.
If you're listening to this, I would say you probably fall into the camp where you could have a tendency to overparent
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because you're somebody who listens to parenting podcasts and yes. cares enough to do that,
yes.
right?
Yeah. And same with us. Because
same
we
with
work
us.
At a ministry for parents.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I always hear my parents, and they're like, oh, when I was 8, I used to cook for all my younger siblings, and I'd walk home from school, and I, you know, had all these jobs in the neighborhood, and mm-hmm. we'd hitchhike to the neighborhood pool. And I'm like, my kids won't even stay home alone for me to go get the mail in the mailbox.
Right.
Like, what
right.
has changed? And so I recently read this great book. It is a secular book called How to Raise an Adult by Julie Lithcott Haynes. And she said that really this big change from like our parents' generation to, you know, us these days was really shifted kind of in the 80s. And a lot
okay.
of that was with, this is one of my favorite childhood shows, but with an increased awareness of abductions of children from Unsolved mm-hmm. Mysteries. Remember the Adam
yeah,
Walsh
or,
story?
Well, America's Most Wanted.
Yeah, both of those. Like traumatizing
was,
as a kid, right?
What's the guy's name that hosts it? But it was his
yes.
son, Adam Walsh, who was abducted
yeah.
and he started this whole, you know, organization for missing and exploited children, and then
right.
that show. And
yeah.
it went from being low awareness to high awareness, right? Of and, the stranger danger thing.
And in the book, she says kidnappings have not increased.
No, they've decreased, actually.
They've actually decreased, exactly.
All kind of violent crime has decreased significantly.
But we just see it more now in the news and social media. So it feels like this constant threat, when in reality, it's really not. The other thing she said really shifted this change in parenting in the 80s was the onset of the self-esteem movement, right? Okay. Where you got participation awards and they really valued you as a person and not really your outcomes.
Yeah, your personhood over your outcomes, which I actually, I'm not saying I disagree with, but I think like anything, when you see major shifts in the culture, there are going to be some unintended consequences, right? And you have to have a balanced view. It's like your personhood absolutely matters more than anything else, but also outcomes count.
Yeah, right. We're not just going to like cheer you on because you got up and went to junior high. Like you've got to graduate junior high. Like, yay, you did it. You got out of bed. It's like, okay, you got to keep going.
And we're not bagging on millennials and the participation trophy is not millennials' fault that they got a participation trophy for everything. They didn't ask for one. Yeah. They were, you know, it's like... That's how that our whole generation was parented.
Yeah. I have a 4-year-old and he did soccer. I don't know if I told you the story already. He did soccer last season and he has 2 older brothers. So he's super athletic and super competitive. Well, all the other 3- and 4-year-olds are like, you know, chasing butterflies, picking daisies out on the soccer field. And he was the only one that got goals all season long. Like if there was goals scored, it was because of Bennett, which is great, whatever. But half the kids never even left the sideline because they were crying. You know, they were little. They were 3.5- and 4-year-olds. Like, note to the parents out there, don't do organized sports until your kids are at least 6 or 7 because it's just kind of a waste of a Saturday morning. But he loved it. It was fine. But at the end of the year, they handed out medals to everyone. And everyone on the team got a medal and he came home and he's like, Mom, I'm the only one that scored a goal the entire season. I got 20 goals. No one else got one goal. He's like, whatever, Sammy or whatever his name is. He's like, he never even played in one game. He just cried on the sidelines. Why did he get a medal? I'm like, this is called a participation award. Everyone gets it just because their parents signed him up, son. Like, get used to it. No, just kidding.
But, yeah.
He felt he should have had a secondary medal for his achievement. Well,
he needed the the VIP.
Yeah.
You know,
and I was like, no, this is just
most valuable player award. Right.
And not that we would, you know, need that or whatever, but it was just a good reminder. Like, you know, funny, even a 4-year-old can pick up on that. Like, I'm working hard. I'm doing everything I need to out there to score these goals.
Right.
And you got
Everybody gets the same.
Yeah.
You know,
everyone just gets the same goal. So
they get rewarded for mediocrity, you know, or being 3. Right. Whatever.
100%. But they're little. But I think what we kind of wanted to get across today in our messaging, we're going to come up with some pitfalls here and then maybe another episode on some solutions for parents. But
yeah, I think mostly today we're trying to understand, you know, the problems that overparenting can cause and how to identify overparenting in ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, we definitely want to do another episode where we talk about, okay, like, let's talk about some solutions. Like, what can we do instead? And how do we put a lid on this? How do we prepare these kids?
Strong adults, yeah. So one of the parenting pitfalls that we've identified is obviously the term helicopter parents, right? Mm-hmm. So parents who seek opportunities out for their kids or make decisions or problem solve for them. So the overly involved parent offers some short-term gains, right, of safety and maybe job opportunities or scholarships secured. But really, like, long-term, it's not having a lot of benefits on these kids when the parents are swooping in and solving all the problems for them instead of equipping them and coaching them how to solve them on their own.
Yeah. Well, in college, once kids go to college, I think you start to see this in stark relief. You see the contrast, right? When kids are in junior high and high school, I think it's still appropriate at that point, too, for parents to have some level of involvement, not helicoptering, but some level of sort of helping with some of this stuff. But that should go steadily down.
Right.
As they get closer to college age, even if they don't go to college, whatever they kind of do post high school.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I remember seeing in college, that was the first time I realized how reliant kids were on their parents. I remember kids calling, like my friends, how do I make a doctor's appointment?
Yeah.
Calling their mom. How do I pay for gas? And I'm like, you moved out of state and you don't know how to pump gas?
How to put gas in your
like
car?
How to get money for that? Yeah. I mean, this was back in the day, so it wasn't as easy as a credit card back then, but it was, I remember having like a Shell gas card and all that.
Right.
But anyway, no one really knew what to do with themselves. I mean, there were a few that did, but it was pretty glaring. Like, okay, did these parents not really prepare these kids? Or maybe they tried and the kids just weren't listening.
That's also possible. Because I have been trying to teach my girls to cook more things.
Yeah.
You know, they can make like ramen noodles and, you
toast
know, toast, Pop-Tart. That's not really cooking as much as it is just like heating up food. But I'm like, I want you to like expand your abilities here a little bit. But thinking back, I remember myself, my mom is a great cook. Yeah. She always had us help her in the kitchen. She was trying to teach us how to do stuff. Mm-hmm. And we were just not receptive to learning it. Yeah, we helped her in the kitchen, but we did not retain. Mm-hmm. That didn't mean we retained any of that information to put to use when we finally. So when I got married, I mean, I got married at 20. Mm. I mean, I was horrible. So it was a little, sometimes, ultimately, we can do our best with trying to prepare our kids. And they probably are going to make calls like that to us in college. Like, how do I separate out my laundry right? Or if they even know that they need to separate out their laundry. Mm-hmm. I remember, I think I maybe told this story before, but I can't remember. My youngest brother, Colt, who he's the youngest of four of us. He's 10 years younger than me. So I was out of the house, married, had kids before he was ever going to college. But I remember going and visiting him at his dorm, or he was living in a house with some guys at that point. But I went to go visit him and I was like, oh, I'm going to wash your sheets for you. And he's like, good, because I didn't realize you did that. You'd need to do. I've never washed my sheets. I was like, that's disgusting. And I knew you'd never washed your sheets. I'm not going anywhere near a bed in this house without clean sheets on it. And so it was like a bachelor pad, right? So I'm like, I'm going to wash all the sheets and all the towels when I get here. So I go to their washing machine and they had a big bottle of fabric softener, but I was like, oh, well, you're out of detergent. Yeah. I'll just run to the store and get you some detergent. And he's like, no, we have detergent.
No.
I was like, no, you don't. That's fabric softener. And he's like, well, it's in a bottle. You can pour it in the
Bless
him. I was like,
and
it was like a giant one from Costco, and then it was almost gone. So he had been doing
his laundry
for at least 2 years.
Oh, I love that.
With fabric softener only. I mean, at least they were getting in the hot water and getting, you know, but I was like, Colton, sweet Colt. Like, right. Yeah. Bless it.
And I know your mom.
Probably. You know, told him Darcy Kimmel has prepared, has tried her best.
Yeah, exactly.
But sometimes we're still boneheads, you know?
For sure.
So, but I do think there's a difference between, maybe you just don't know how to do something or you've never faced a situation where you've had to do it, and crippling our kids by constantly, I think another one is bailing them out of consequences. Mm-hmm. That's, I talk about this a lot in my book, and I know just from my own parenting experience, the temptation it is, because we don't like to see our kids in pain.
Right.
We don't like to see them in trouble with other people. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the time you get a little bit of that defensiveness.
Right.
But we can misplace that protectiveness and misplace that defensiveness.
Yeah.
If we don't check ourselves and say, oh, what is actually in my kid's best interest? Mm. So they did this thing.
Right.
That was wrong, or they broke this rule, or they didn't turn in something that they were supposed to turn in at a certain time, or they were late to work, or, you know, whatever it was. It's like, they did the thing. Now, if they didn't do the thing and it's unjust, that's one thing. But if they did the thing, it's like, well, we got to let those consequences befall them, whether they're natural consequences or whether they're kind of imposed by other authority figures, because otherwise, first of all, they're going to think that they're above authority and that, and they're not. And that's not a great way to go through life. Mm-hmm. But also it steals, it truly does. It steals learning opportunities from them. It steals opportunities to gain confidence and resilience.
Right. So when an opportunity comes up where your kid damages property or hurts someone or puts themselves in danger, does something stupid at school, allow them to make those mistakes and allow the natural consequences to fall, like you said, if it's within reason and it's not like unjust, and not swoop in. And then in this book, the author Julie talks about, she's a admissions counselor at Stanford.
Oh, okay.
And she said so many times kids wouldn't be doing well with their grades, and instead of coming in and talking to me about it, or she became the dean of students or something, I don't remember, but she was working a lot with the students, and she said kids couldn't even sit there and explain to me why we should keep them in the school. They were, their parents would fly in and intersect and say, we can't let this incident keep him from being in the honors program at Stanford, and we can't, blah blah blah. And she'd say, I would consider keeping him in the honors program or consider keeping her at the school. But the fact that your mom had to come in and fight your battle for you, like, this isn't the kind of student we want here.
Right.
So it really did the kid a disservice by the parents swooping in when there was natural consequences that were going to fall from the mistakes the kid had made.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think it's important as parents that we remember that discipline is sometimes allowing for pain. Well, consequences, but consequences are often some form of pain, either physical, but less often physical pain, more often emotional or relational pain, financial, right? So some form of pain tends to be the consequences that serve as discipline in our life. And so whether that discipline's coming from us, whether it's coming from some natural consequence of what happened, whether it's coming from another authority figure, when we discipline our kids or allow other people to discipline them, we're allowing a little bit of pain right now to help them avoid so much more pain in the future when the stakes are higher. When they don't have an out, when, you know, the same kind of thing down the road loses them a job, loses them a spouse, breaks down their relationship with the people who are important to them. And so, you know, we're choosing to kind of enter into that pain with them because our kids' pain is our pain. So we're having to kind of almost go against our own instincts in some ways. We're kind of curbing it. We're going, okay, I feel that. But like scripture says, we take every thought captive and make it obedient to Christ. So is our instinct, we take it captive and we ask it, is this in the best, the eventual best interest of my kids? You know,
Sometimes that's the hardest thing to do.
It's the hardest thing to do.
Suffer or to have pain, but that's what motivates.
And it's inconvenient for us a lot of the time. So it takes way longer. Super inconvenient. I'm like this with, I mean, I would say, the place I have to check myself most is getting little things done. Little things around the house, or, you know, putting the groceries away, loading the dishwasher. Like, I'm so neurotic about that kind of stuff. And I have to try to be like, let them do it. It's going to take three times as long and they're going to do a horrible job of it. And you're going to have to come back in and show them how you need to do it different. Or better. No, I mean, I try to be like, if they did it different than me and it's at least makes sense and it's good, okay, fine. Then we leave it that way. But like,
it needs to be
you
efficient.
Did a very poor job
have,
of
like,
this.
You can't have
like a bowl
of spaghetti facing up in the top, of the dishwasher.
Like, yeah, that's not going to.
The water comes from the bottom source.
Exactly. So I think that's been my challenge. And then, you know, when you're a working parent, you are busy lives. I think it is just so easy to be like doing it. You know, I'm tying your shoes for you because it takes you, you know,
45 minutes,
45 minutes to get your freaking shoes on. And we're going to do some of that stuff some of the time. I think overall, though, you know, we need to check ourselves to say, how often am I these three things, you know, doing for my kids things they can already do for themselves or almost do for themselves?
Or we're almost, they can almost do it for themselves, but it takes just some sacrifice of time for us to coach them to get over that hump.
To coach them, to be patient, to allow them to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know. I have one that can almost load the dishwasher, but it's still a hot mess. And it's like,
right.
I just want to do it, like you said.
Right.
But that's not fair to him. He needs to learn how to do it right. It doesn't have to be my way, but you can't have...
sufficiently. I think sufficiently is a good term because, yes, I am definitely like, I like things done exactly a way.
Yeah.
And it's my way.
Right.
And my way may or may not be the most efficient, best way to do it, but I like it that way, you know, so...
It's exhausting. Yeah. Another area where we, I think as parents have a tendency to accidentally overparent is when comparison comes into play.
Mm.
I know I can fall prey to this. I'll be like, oh, wait, they're doing summer tutoring for math and reading. Oh, well, why is that kid doing
that?
We should be doing that. You see this a lot in high school with AP, you know, the college courses. Sometimes there's this like, academic arms race. Luckily, my parents were like totally naive to the fact that I was even in high school most of the time. And so I had no pressure from them. But I accidentally got some AP credits in art. I had no idea. And it was a pleasant surprise when I graduated and they're like, you have 8 credits as an elective. I'm like, I do? What did I do? What's AP? Like, I had no idea. And they were like, oh, well, you took 4 years of art. So anyway, the last 2 years were AP classes. I'm like, oh, okay. What does that mean? And they're like, well, that counts as college course. I'm like, why did no one tell me I could be doing this?
Getting college
credits. Yeah, my mom was like, oh, honey, that's great. Like, my parents had no... you know, push on me.
Well, see, my girls have done AP classes, but then it really only matters how you do on the AP test.
Oh, yes. So that's hard.
We don't, as a family, just I can just say overall as a family, we do not test well.
Yeah. So you don't get the credit if you don't pass. Oh, well.
Yeah. So we were like, well, that was pointless.
Anyway, but and if your kid is smart and talented and that's a challenge for them and a personal goal, more power to you. But as a parent, I think we have to be careful not to push our kids into things just because other kids are doing it.
Well, and the example from this admissions counselor that wrote the book that we're kind of, you know, we're kind of drawing from as we have this conversation, she was seeing the kids who had done all these AP classes, but which is fine, but they had an absence of all these other important soft skills of self-advocacy, of the ability to work in you know, groups, to communicate, to whatever. And her thing was an AP class, you know, we will technically give you college credit for it. It's not, at least not at Stanford. It's really not college equivalency. And her thing was, I would rather see a kid who didn't take any AP classes, did really well in their, you know, non-AP regular classes, and then also had all the, you know, training and coaching and were parented towards having these super important soft skills of being able to send the teacher an email when you have a question, being able to, you know, bring something up if you have a concern.
Right.
Being able to make a case to the to the admissions counselor of why you should get to stay.
Exactly.
You know, that matters more in real life.
In the real world. Right. When you get into a career or vocational setting, they're not looking at your GPA anymore.
And they don't care that you took AP classes.
Doesn't matter.
Right.
And if you don't have a high emotional intelligence and can't interact with people, and that's going to be...
Yeah. Well, emotional intelligence is a huge piece of what is talked about in this whole conversation of overparenting. And that academics and intellect is not the only form of intelligence. It's probably in the middle in terms of its importance.
Right?
It matters, but it doesn't matter nearly as much as we all think. It's really that emotional and relational intelligence that matters way more.
And then the last one we wanted to hit on is a misguided ego. And we kind of talked about this with the comparison game idea, but could some of our parenting, I know for me it can, be my misplaced ego? Like, is how my kid dress, how he eats, how he acts, how he plays on the football field, is that a reflection of me?
Yeah.
Or my parenting?
And our ego definitely drives our behavior, right? So I think, and this was identified by Dr. Levine as being one of the ways in which we inadvertently overparent.
Right.
Right? Because our we've connected our kids with our own ego.
Right. And the bar is so high, it creates added right. stress on us and requires us to be constantly involved. If it is my end goal that my kid is on the principal's list and has A pluses in every class, you better believe I'm going to be looking at every paper that comes home in that folder. I'm on that parent portal every mm-hmm. day, because if it's tied to, you know, my ego, how he does in school, I'm going to be super involved in right. every aspect of what he's doing in school. Projects. I know when they send home projects, my son Brayden, poor thing, he's always so embarrassed because I make him do it on his own. So he has a big animal project right. and it says in there, and the teachers do a good job communicating, like, we need to reiterate, the parents can help, but this is the kid's project. Well, Brayden came home after
and you
last
know
one.
They have to say that
because it's an issue. And Brayden goes, Mom, my projects are so embarrassing. I'm like, why? I thought you did a good job. He's like, but you can tell everyone else's parents are helping them. I'm sure it's not everyone, but in his, you know, perception.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, sorry, I'm not getting graded on it. I already went to school. This is your work. Right. I'll help you. But like, I'm not staying up till midnight doing a project on Sunday night. That's your thing, dude. Like,
right.
So
right.
again, it's just letting the kids do the work. They are doing yeah. the projects. They're delivering the forgotten assignments. The parents aren't swooping in mm-hmm. And being overly involved to pad their own egos.
Well, and I would say, correct me if I'm wrong, I would say you tend to be a more competitive person.
Oh, super.
You're competitive.
Yeah.
I am not all that competitive yeah. of a person. I'm not all that ambitious of a person. Honestly, I have fallen into most of the success I've ever had in my life. Also, I have a lot of privilege, mm-hmm. right, that I've been granted. And so I am not out there pursuing big goals. and I'm not super competitive. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's easy for a person like me to say, oh, just let them do it. It's no big right. deal. No big deal. But you're it a competitive person. Mm-hmm. And so you probably at times have to kind of curb
yeah,
that.
I do. My husband and I can't even play on the same, like, if we're playing a board game, Scattergories, Taboo, whatever. Catchphrase.
Do you have to be same teams or opposite
team? Because if we're on the opposite team, there might be divorce papers filed because we're so competitive. So, yeah.
We're both very competitive.
When it comes to anything, sports, games,
yeah.
competition.
And my Mike and I are both pretty non-competitive. Yeah.
Well, that's
He's more ambitious than me, but yeah, pretty non-competitive. But yeah, it does. So depending on your personality type, not parroting from a place of ego may seem easier to you.
Right.
But ego shows up in different ways for me.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it's not so much competitive and like, oh, they got to keep up with the other yeah. kids and I got to put them in this camp and we got to go to, the, you know, right. we got to do this tutoring and they need to get into these classes to yeah. like, no, we right. don't do any of that. But, you know, musically, right? I'm mm-hmm. a musician. Like, I want yeah. them to do well at that. Nice. And yeah. I tend to push a little bit there, maybe more mm-hmm. than I should, or, you know, and I can, it's easy for me to say character issues, but yeah. sometimes that can go overboard where I was like, I need to give them the freedom to make mistakes, mm-hmm. even yeah. character mistakes, because how else are they going to learn things? Mm-hmm. Obviously, I correct them, discipline them, but sometimes it's like, don't forget what family you're in.
Oh, right. Right.
Don't forget who you are when you walk out this door.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I've said those words before and I've had to back them up and say, look, that's not the reason.
Right.
For you to have good character. That was yeah. me mm-hmm. putting my ego and my expectations on you.
Yeah.
You know, because I've written a parenting book, right? So right. like, and my dad has written the parenting book and yeah. like, it's easy to get it twisted. Like, character yeah. matters. You should have good character.
Right.
But not because of how it reflects on me.
Yeah. No, that's good. It's good that so, you can recognize that. And
that's how I overparent, if we're confessing.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on the character one, too. I think we have so much more we can say, but we'll break it into two
yeah.
episodes. Yeah. But I think the whole premise here is we just kind of want to wet your whistle for our desire to help parents prepare our kids to cope in adulthood, to advocate for themselves, to know how to talk to strangers.
To thrive.
Yeah, to be responsible and to like know how to make toast by junior high.
Right.
Like
basic money management.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, basic life skills and mm-hmm. then a lot of those soft skills that are important for their yeah. relationships. And and we want them to survive, we also want them to thrive in whatever that means for them, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'm glad we kind of talked about this problem. I definitely have, you know, need to always constantly self-reflect. Yeah. And I'm excited to come back together, you know, in another episode and talk about some solutions. Like, yeah. Okay, what do we actually need to do and not do? And
to prepare
kids. Make a little plan, because, you know, without intention, we're just going to sort of fall back on habits or tendencies. Mm-hmm. We appreciate you listening or watching, and we love our subscribers, and we appreciate that you support this program, this podcast, and share it if you think that this would be helpful to other people. And we would love to pray for you. So you can reach us at family@gracebasedfamilies.com. with any prayer requests or comments or questions. And again, we value you and thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Grace-Based Families podcast. This is part of Grace-Based Families ministry.
For more resources, check us out on gracebasedfamilies.com/podcast or stream us on all major podcasting platforms.
Once again, this is Karis
and Michelle.
Until next time.